ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Jules and Jez here. Join us as we unpack the news of the week on Not Stupid.
The most powerful Anglican in the world, for the first time in history, is a woman.
And if you read some of the critique, it could be the end of the universe.
End of the world. You can find Not Stupid on the ABC Listen app.
And now watch us on ABC iView.
Open social media and you'll meet a wall of ageless faces. Celebrities, influencers, the people setting the new beauty standards and telling you how to reach them. Some look strange at first, but the more you see them, the more you ask, why don't I look like that? The problem is, when you start chasing the face you don't have, things don't always go to plan. And by the time you realise something's gone wrong, it might be too late. I'm Thomas Arete. This is a third episode of Before and After, a four-part series by Background Briefing. And it's about what happens when the internet tells you what's wrong with you and tries to sell you the solution. This week's story is reported by Gina McEwen. Hey, Gina, how are you?
Hi, Tom. Good.
Good. Great to have you back in with us. What have you been looking at this time?
So we're starting with someone named Lana Ristovsky. Lana's sitting at home in Melbourne on her phone and she's seeing something come up again and again on her social feed.
There were photos on social media with young girls and also older women, but older women looking fantastic for their age. You know, no wrinkles, no fine lines, plump cheeks, plump lips.
And she looks up and she catches herself in the mirror.
And I wanted to look fabulous at that age, like these women. You know, I'm getting a little bit older. I just turned 40.
And she's a single mum and she's starting to think everybody's looking pretty snatched on her social media feed. And
yeah, social media's great for that, isn't it?
And because it's 10 years ago, it was very much Facebook and Instagram at the time.
Yeah.
And she's looking at people like the Kardashians.
Your lips look amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Kendall said they were too big yesterday.
Are you talking about
I thought
lips?
My cheeks are starting to drop, so I thought I'll go to a cosmetic clinic.
She books in and heads in for her appointment.
So when I went in there, it was quite beautiful, you know, very elegant. I think they had a bit of tea on the side, a little table, and then a coffee table with glossy magazines. I felt like I'm in the right place and I'm going to be looked after.
She gets called into the suite and she lies in kind of like the dentist chair sort of thing, lying back. A woman in a white coat comes in and this is the cosmetic doctor. So they start talking about what she wants to get done. And the doctor suggests dermal filler. Do you know what dermal filler is?
Dermal filler? No, I don't.
So dermal filler is a cosmetic injectable and it's considered to be a non-surgical injectable. So it's not like a massive surgery like lipo or breast implants or things like that.
Mm.
The doctor said it'll be subtle, it'll soften and refresh your face. And so Lana thinks, sure.
She made it sound so, you know, this is the best product for you.
And so she gets the injection done and what Lana was actually getting was something called a hyaluronic acid filler, so the dermal filler.
Hyaluronic acid.
Yes, hyaluronic acid.
Hyaluronic acid, okay.
Sort of multiple sites where she gets it done and then she gets handed a mirror.
I totally hated it.
The injector's trying to reassure her, you know, it's subtle. Lana, you're looking refreshed. And Lana's been told that the filler she's had will metabolize over time. It could take another month, up to 18 months, but she's in a state of panic, right?
When I looked in the mirror at home and I took photos and I just couldn't recognize myself, I was devastated.
She feels like she walked in looking a certain way and now she looks completely different when she looks in the mirror.
When I smiled, it wasn't my smile. Just looked so unnatural. It looked horrible. I hated it. Yeah, big mistake. My cheeks would pop out like golf balls. It looked ridiculous. I didn't realise that these fillers were going to change my appearance so much. And so instantly, biggest regret. I was in such a panic thinking, what have I done to myself?
And so she's really thinking, oh my God, you know, is this going to be temporary? Or am I actually going to look like this?
You can, I mean, you can imagine the anxiety.
Yeah.
Why on earth did I do this?
Yeah. And she's wondering, am I ever going to get my face back? In the days after her appointment, Lana's showing her face to her friends and family. And they are supportive, but it's really not making Lana feel any better.
They don't know what it's like unless it happens to them. No one knows what it's like.
Lana was feeling really isolated and she didn't even want to leave the house. Like, it was really bad, but she had to go to work.
I was a table games dealer. I used to work at the casino. I was always dealing with the public. And I always had a spotlight over my head to perform my duties. So I was quite paranoid, constantly looking in the mirror at work, thinking, can anyone see what I can see?
She ends up after a while deciding, I can't keep going to work. I can't feel like this. And it ends up sort of inducing so much anxiety that she quits the job.
She quits the job.
Yeah.
She can't be seen in public like this.
Yeah, because it's not going away.
How long are we talking?
It's actually a few years.
A few years?
Yeah.
Wow, so this is not going away.
Yeah, exactly.
She must be feeling, wait a minute, this is what I'm stuck with.
Yes. So she gets referrals to specialists, and over the next few years she sees lots of doctors.
I've seen a dermatologist that couldn't help me. I've been to another surgeon. He just laughed it off. I've just seen another surgeon. He said to me, I've never heard of such a thing.
Some said they didn't believe that Lana could still have filler in her face.
They said it was down to body dysmorphia. You know, you look fine. There's nothing wrong with you. You know, I get different things from different people. You don't know who to believe.
She's told she could get surgery to get it cut out of her face.
Some surgeons actually can cut out the filler, but that's also dangerous.
It could lead to further scarring, and she just decides that's too risky. At one point, she even wrote to the company that makes the filler that she got, and they respond by saying the same thing that everyone else has, that this filler is temporary, it'll break down in the body over time. And remember, doctors had also told her this, that it would eventually be metabolized, but the filler doesn't seem to go away. Lana feels it's still in there.
So I'm pretty much stuck with this temporary dermal filler that was supposed to last up to 18 months, and it's been years. So I'm pretty devastated.
She gets to 2018. So this is, you know, 3 years after that first treatment. Mm. And she talks to this surgeon who other people have kind of recommended to her.
This is a cosmetic surgeon. A medical doctor,
yeah,
a cosmetic
yeah.
surgeon. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he says to her, I don't think we should operate on this, but he gives her a suggestion that at the time was kind of a bit far-fetched.
Because he believed I still had dermal filler.
He says, well, why not go and find out once and for all what's actually underneath your skin and get an MRI for this?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this before, and he was the first one that had come forward and said, you know, an MRI is what will determine whether you have dermal filler in your face.
So Lana decides, I have no other option at this stage. She's really run out of things and nothing's getting better. So this MRI suggestion is this kind of glimmer of hope for her. She thinks, okay, this is at least something that I can do.
So I went and had this MRI.
And the report comes back a couple of days later.
The report stated that I had dermal filler in my face, up to 4 mils, and that's what I was injected with.
And she actually sent me a copy. So this is the first one.
Show me what you've got there. So what am I looking at here? So, yeah, when you look at the green arrows on this MRI, it does indicate where the two cheeks are, the left and the right. And there's a white substance. Obviously, it's a black and white image being an MRI, but it's a white substance on the left and right cheeks.
They highlighted all the key images where the filler was. And in my cheeks, it was in the same spot.
But then I scroll down to the next image, and it's quite extraordinary because you can see her teeth, you can see her mouth there and where the lips are. And yeah, just on either side of the lips, these green arrows point out where the white patches are as well.
It also stated in the report that I had dermal filler in my lips, and the radiologist referred that as lip implants. And I said to the radiologist, I don't have lip implants. It's impossible. I've only had dermal filler.
And that's when Lana discovers the filler appears to have migrated to her lips.
Oh, so it's spread, that initial injection has spread down her face.
It actually moved down to my lips and it looked like I had lip implants. So That was a little bit shocking that it started to migrate. So it comes up white on the scan.
And this is huge for Lana because all along she's been told this is temporary, like it'll dissolve, and here she has imaging that finally proves her right.
Right, so not only is the filler still there, it's moved?
It looks that way, yes.
I was very happy to know that I finally have confirmation that, you know, I'm not delusional. I know I've still got filler in my face. It's there in black and white. It's on the scan and it's also in writing in the report.
And since then, she's been getting more scans.
Yeah, I've actually had 5 MRIs from 2018 till recently, and each MRI states the same thing, that the filler is still present in my face.
What Lana doesn't realise is that around this time, she's not the only one whose filler is starting to show up on MRIs. And that's starting to get the attention of some doctors who look at these kind of scans, including this one radiologist in Melbourne.
It's hard work, but someone needs to do this because everyone's getting filled.
Dr. Mobin Master specialises in MRI, CT and ultrasound, and he's having these patients come into his offices. He's looking at the scans and the images and he's going, it looks like this person has something in their face. It looks like it got filler in their face. And they're saying to him, oh, no, I haven't had filler for years. It couldn't be there. And he's thinking, well, like, you've got filler in your face.
A lot of the patients that were turned away to say, you know, you're crazy, it can't be filler, it has to be gone, are getting imaging and MRI and confirming that, yes, it's the filler.
And these patients, some have had a very similar experience to Lana.
These poor patients were gobsmacked and said, I feel it's filler, and they were told it's not.
And so he starts thinking, well, this is interesting.
What's going on here?
Yeah. And Mobin said that at the time Lana got her injections, so around 10 years ago, there was what he calls a pandemic of filler.
At the time, people were just filling. Just fill them up, pump them up, because they thought it dissolves.
Everyone was chasing what was called Instagram face.
Yeah.
The kind of plump cheeks, plump lips, really smooth.
Any problems or mistakes you make, it's forgiving because it'll just go away, but unfortunately it doesn't.
It has been, and I imagine social media has made that worse, but yeah, you, particularly in the last 15, 20 years, you've heard about injectables.
Yeah, and since then the industry has only grown and it's still growing. It's huge. It's a $1 billion industry and a big part of that is filler. It's one of the most popular procedures to get done. After seeing scan after scan of patients with these MRIs, Mobin and his colleagues decide they need to dig right into this. So they set up a study to try and figure out how long this filler is actually staying in people's faces for.
I had to go through all their data, show that they've had filler in the midface, how much they had, look at their medical notes, and the MRI process took a huge amount of time.
In fact, it took 8 years, but eventually he's able to get enough solid evidence on 33 patients, and he figures out that this filler can last anywhere from 2 up to 15 years.
It stays in your body for that long.
It stays in your face. And only in the last 12 months or so, he and his colleagues were able to release this landmark MRI peer-reviewed paper that actually shows that this filler, this particular type of filler that Lana got, isn't always temporary.
So we've got solid evidence that fillers last longer than what we first were told.
And this is really significant because it's super rare to get peer-reviewed research on cosmetic injectables. Mm. A lot of the studies are funded by pharmaceutical companies and the makers of the products.
The studies that were done, none of them were imaging-based. So initially the drug companies did it according to photography and what it looks like, which is completely subjective.
And so photos of people, you know, they get the injection.
Before and after
a stuff. A number of months later, it appears to be gone.
Yeah.
Which it does. You know, it appears to be gone.
A lot of patients have got filler stuck in this triangle in a deep space called the buccal space underneath the cheek fat spaces. And when they inject in the cheeks or in the buccal fat, it just squirts into this deep, whopping great hole.
And Tom, when I checked the product information for Lana's dermal filler, it doesn't mention anything about staying in the face for a long period at all.
Okay.
And I can show you that. Hold on.
Okay. Yes, I've got the product information here. It says that the effect was sustained 18 months after the last treatment in more than two-thirds of the subjects, and a majority of subjects were reported with maintained cheek volume of up to at least 6 months. So we're talking about months and weeks here, Gina, but no mention of years.
No, no mention of the longevity research.
Yeah, yeah.
Mobin says that some filler pharmaceutical companies are now aware of the MRI research, but
they don't give exact longevity data because there's not enough data. I mean, my 33-patient trial is the biggest ever performed so far, but we need huge trials, and we need trials of the product and how long it lasts and where it was placed and what position it was and the age of the patient. You know, that's very early. We need far more information.
So this filler is staying in the face for years. How dangerous is that? Are there health risks?
Well, Dr. Mobin Master says that the problem is that your immune system can start attacking the filler, and it's something that might not happen immediately.
The filler might have been there for 4 or 5 years, and then suddenly they get itchy, they get pain, they get burning. It's like breast implants. When your body doesn't like it, they just have to come out.
But this, you know, just has to come out part is more complicated than it sounds. For Lana, getting it removed really has not been so easy. In fact, it's caused her worse problems. Back when Lana got the dermal filler in that cosmetic clinic, what happened was she was in the chair sitting there saying, I really don't like it.
So I went back a few days later, and that's when I said, please get rid of this, I hate it.
This time at the clinic, Lana's seen by a male doctor, and he basically says there is something we can do to get rid of the filler.
And he said to me, it's a simple, easy procedure. All we do is dissolve it. I was told it would dissolve the filler.
So Dissolver is another injection. It's called hyaluronidase. And the idea is that it just attacks the hyaluronic acid, so that particular dermal filler. It sounds really simple on paper. You know, inject something else, it'll get that part that you've just injected. It's actually even becoming almost like the trending thing on social in the last year or so.
The dissolver is becoming the trending thing.
Yes, getting it removed, because it's been this movement from this sort of puffy, plumped up Instagram face, big lips, over to this sort of more, you know, quote, natural look. Like Kylie Jenner's done it, Courtney Cox, they're talking about getting their filler dissolved.
I went on a journey the last year dissolving like half my lip filler.
It's even a trend among some influencers to sort of document their, you know, dissolver journey.
The dissolve journey. Yeah,
the dissolver, right, as like their last stage of their injectables journey.
Another thing I regret was getting heaps of filler in my face. Took like 3 sessions to remove all of my filler.
We're talking about some fairly high profile people here, right? Millions of followers. I imagine they are making it look pretty easy. So does Lana go ahead with it?
Yes, she does. But things don't go as smoothly as the celebs make it look on social. After one session of Dissolver, of the injections, Lana was told that she actually needed more. And this isn't uncommon. Sometimes people do need multiple sessions, or they're told that they need multiple sessions of Dissolver. So Lana gets this injection and she can't see much of a difference. So they tell her, oh, you've got to come back, you know, for a few more sessions.
I ended up having a few rounds within a couple of weeks. Nothing really happened. I didn't see the filler dissolve.
Now Lana's thinking, well, the Dissolver doesn't actually seem to work. And she ends up going back 4 times over a few years.
But when I looked in the mirror, I still looked swollen, so I knew it hadn't worked.
The filler was still there, but Lana says something else was dissolved instead.
Hyaluronidase didn't actually dissolve my dermal filler. I actually believe it dissolved my connective tissue.
So how does she know that?
Well, she doesn't know for sure, but if you sit across from Lana now, like, she can actually pull her skin right off her face. Like, it's really kind of drooping off her face.
My skin's like bubblegum. My teardrops are sunken in. My cheeks have caved in. The skin's quite loose and saggy and stretchy.
So she says the dissolver makes things worse and doesn't do what it's actually intended to do. The filler remains and the dissolver actually makes the skin worse.
Yeah, and that's what Lana's thinking. She's talking to doctors and specialists saying this isn't actually working, but they're all saying that's impossible, dissolver doesn't work like that, so that's impossible. So Lana decides to go online. She tries to learn more about what she's actually had injected into her face. And one of the things that Lana realises is that this dissolver, hyaluronidase, is actually used off-label in Australia.
What do you mean by that?
So Lana emailed the company that makes this dissolver and they've written back to her and said it's not approved for use of dissolving dermal filler.
It's not actually approved by the TGA.
What's it used? What's it supposed to be used for?
Well, the dissolver is approved to help with anaesthetic during childbirth, to prevent bleeding after childbirth, anaesthetic for fractures, and it helps with the injection of saline or substances, you know, used during X-ray. And it does work. Like, it does work for those purposes, and it does actually have an important role in cosmetics because it's used in case filler is injected and hits a blood vessel, which could cause bleeding or necrosis. So if you shoot it full of hyaluronidase, it can quickly break down that filler. And having it in the clinic means that staff can act quickly if something goes wrong. But what happened was people figured out that if you shot a bit of dissolver into some dermal filler that you had put in, it appeared to go away, particularly around the lips. And so it started being used for that purpose. And doctors are allowed to do that. It's not against the law. But the problem is that when it's used to dissolve dermal filler, it's unregulated, which means there are no clear guidelines on how to use it. So people might end up being injected with different types and different amounts, but you're still supposed to be walked through the risks if you're using it off-label. Lana says that she didn't fully understand the risks. She ended up taking the injector to the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal, which found that she gave informed verbal consent after the treatment was explained to her, even though she didn't sign a consent form. Lana also made a consumer claim over the dermal filler treatment she received, but her complaints to the tribunal and another health regulator were ultimately rejected. The tribunal found the clinic had administered the treatment appropriately and explained the risks. And so Lana's sort of sitting there, you know, in the weeks and the months afterwards thinking, I feel like I've got filler in my face. You know, I feel like this dissolver has completely wrecked my face. And she was going to these doctors and these specialists and they're all telling her, you know, that's impossible. She feels medically gaslit. Mm. And she really was having this rolling doubt, is my face ever actually going to go back to the way it was? She decides to go online onto social media forums and researches, has anyone else had this issue with this dissolver?
I started talking to women that had the same experience as myself with hyaluronidase.
She finds some people on some cosmetic surgery forums and this little group starts forming.
Then I realised that it just can't be us women in this group. There's got to be more out there.
So she thinks, all right, I'm going to start a Facebook group and I'm going to see what happens.
It took me months to convince myself. I was quite nervous. I was just a bit worried. I don't know. I didn't think anyone outside of this group might believe us. I was actually hoping at the time that when I create it, no one will join and then I'd shut it down.
There's a huge amount of shame around this if things go wrong, because people have described to me, like, if they get an injection and it goes wrong and they go to a medical professional, the ER or whatever it is, they get a feeling that people are saying to them, well, you chose this.
Yeah.
You chose to do this.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, well, I feel like it's their fault.
This was a cosmetic procedure. You can understand why they would feel reluctant to come out and speak about their experience and then why they would feel that shame.
She initially is like, I'm really embarrassed about this. I don't want to post about this. What if it's just me? She decides, right, I'm going to set it up.
One of the first few posts was, after having fillers and getting hyaluronidase to dissolve your dermal filler, have you noticed that your skin's mushy, loose, stretchy and weak? And then I had a whole bunch of people saying, yes, that's me, that's me, that's me. A lot of women knew something was happening to their face, but they just didn't know what it was.
And then they feel like this online group is one of the few places that people can go.
So they get to comfort each other and share stories and, you know, they can all relate to each other. There's a lot of men in my group. You wouldn't think so, but there is. There's a lot of young girls injecting their lips, regretting it because once they dissolve, their lips shrivel. It looks terrible.
And Lana says the symptoms discussed in the group are pretty shocking.
A bacterial infection, an allergic reaction, autoimmune reactions, burning sensations, redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, dry eye, itchiness, rash, inflammation, migration, festoons, swelling under the eyes, abscess, skin dehydration.
I've been led into this private Facebook group.
Do they show photos and stuff like that?
There's photos, yeah. There's posts, there's people from all over the world. There's almost 18,000 people in the group. Lana actually says that since the group has grown and grown in the last few years, hearing these posts over and over of them saying they've got problems and not getting any help has just been really overwhelming for her. So yeah. She has taken breaks from the group at times.
A lot of mental health issues have arisen from this. We've had a couple of members commit suicide over the damage. You know, a lot of women are consumed by it, by, you know, the changes in their appearance. So it changes their life, yeah. They feel like they're not the same person anymore.
And Lana was feeling this way too when I first started speaking to her for this story. She was feeling like there's no hope about ever getting my face fixed. That was up until a few weeks ago.
What happened a few weeks ago?
She heard about a surgeon in Sydney. His name's Dr. Scott Turner, and he made a public post on his website that acknowledged something which he says was a syndrome that he wishes more of his patients knew about. And as soon as Lana saw that, she said, I've got to speak to him. I was walking across the road from Manly Wharf, going to the offices of Dr. Scott Turner. He's a specialist plastic surgeon. And it's this absolutely beautiful setting. His offices sit right across from the harbour beach where there were people paddleboarding, sunbaking, they're having fish and chips in the sun. It was so idyllic. And when I walked in to meet him, I said hi to the receptionist and walked into his office, and straight away he's like, are we doing it in here? You know, he's very straight to the point. He has this really calm, very direct way of speaking, which kind of seems to me like the way surgeons learn to speak when they have to deliver bad news. But I wasn't there to hear bad news. I wanted to find out more about what Scott had posted about, which is something that no other surgeon in Australia has ever really publicly acknowledged before.
You get a little bit fed up when you see people coming in and they've had a lot of these things and they turn around and they say, well, no one's really told me.
And the syndrome that he wishes more of his patients knew about is called post-hyaluronidase syndrome.
So traditionally we thought that when we use hyaluronidase, it will dissolve the filler and it might affect a little bit of our natural hyaluronic acid. And what we thought is that your body would just reproduce all that hyaluronic acid, you know, a week or 2 weeks later. And I think what we're seeing now is that's not actually true.
Scott says that the dissolver isn't selective. Basically, that means that it can't seek out a single target. At the time that Lana had her procedures, this issue wasn't really on the radar. Other doctors in the industry say it can be effective if it's used judiciously, and people shouldn't be fearful if they need it, especially in emergency situations. But in some circumstances, it can cause damage.
The more volume you're putting in, the more number of treatments of hyaluronidase you're having, probably the more that your tissues are affected permanently.
And that means you're at higher risk of getting what he calls a constellation of symptoms.
It creates a widespread effect in the face that, you know, can affect everything from the skin to the fat layer down to the deeper layers with much more accelerated aging changes than what you would expect.
What's convinced Scott that this syndrome is real is, you know, doing facelifts on patients and seeing how different their skin can be if they've had repeated filler and dissolver.
I can't prove these things, and there's no prospective study that I can prove. You need a lot of evidence. And a lot of these things that we're talking about is the level 5 evidence. It's really individual surgeons saying, this is what I'm seeing. This is what we're noticing when we're doing facelifts, and that's probably where we're at the moment.
post-hyaluronidase syndrome isn't widely recognised by the profession. I spoke to several surgeons who offered a range of opinions, and the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons says it hasn't been proven that Dissolver is actually the cause of the syndrome. But more questions are being asked after new research from overseas. In April last year, there was actually a study brought out by these really prominent cosmetic surgeons in the UK. It was this study that uncovered post-hyaluronidase syndrome. They studied 90 patients, and of those 90 patients who'd had this Dissolver, 18% of those had these disfiguring issues afterwards as a result.
So close to a fifth of the people.
Yeah. And like Dr. Mervyn Master, Scott is also seeing that filler is not as temporary as we thought.
About 10% of my patients, when I do a rhinoplasty now, they would have had filler put in their nose, some of them up to 5-10 years later. And when you open up the nose, you can squeeze the skin and it just leaks out. If the average person walked in to get their lips done or their cheeks done and, you know, with using a Miller filler, and someone told them, listen, to the 10, 20, 30% chance that some of this may hang around and then in a couple of years' time you might have to come back and dissolve this, people might think a little bit harder about it.
We asked the Therapeutic Goods Administration about whether the product information for hyaluronic acid dermal filler should be changed. They said they'd consider changing it if there are enough reports about adverse events from clinicians, patients and other regulators, but they haven't noticed any spikes so far. So Lana, basically, as soon as she heard about Dr. Scott Turner publicly posting about filler and Dissolver, she got on the phone to him. They talk, she sends some initial photos, and then they've made an appointment to do a face-to-face consult in Sydney.
What's she hoping comes out of that meeting?
She's hoping that he'll be able to give her a clear diagnosis to confirm what impact the Dissolver's had on her face.
Because we're talking about 10 years of first having the filler, but then having the Dissolver in her face.
It's had impacts on her life, her job.
It would have been a tremendous impact on her self-esteem and her mental health in general.
That's right.
It's a shame that, you know, society puts pressure on women. Like, I was 40 back then and I was under pressure to look better than I already did. I actually looked not bad for my age back then.
In some ways, I think Lana's preparing to be disappointed, but she has a very small glimmer of hope that possibly she might be able to get some of her life back.
Thanks very much.
Lana's flown from Melbourne to Sydney for the day. It's just a few days before we hit publish on this story. I meet up with her on the way to the clinic for her first face-to-face with Scott. And she's even more nervous now than when we last spoke to her back at home in Melbourne.
I didn't sleep at all. I don't like flying at all. It's like, but I had to do it. I just don't know what to expect, and I am quite nervous. But also,
I guess with so much on the line and 10 years of trying, being knocked back, you know, seeing so many specialists, the nerves really were getting to her.
Well, I'm walking in without any expectations. I'm just going to not get my hopes up high. I just have to wait and see. But it's quite nerve-wracking because, you know, even though I get knocked back so many times from so many specialists, I still don't give up.
So we arrive outside the clinic. It's in this converted old terrace building in Bondi Junction in Sydney. Yeah. Is it here?
Is this where?
This is it. Yeah. Where you're coming in, yeah?
We walk in. The clinic's all air-conditioned. There's whitewashed floorboards. It's really nice. There's like marbled walls, velvet couches, soft lighting. Lana's waiting anxiously, sitting on the couch next to me, and then her name's called and she just jumps right up. She disappears into the consultation room with Scott, and about half an hour later...
Fantastic. Is there anything else we need to do? No. Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, I just wasted my time. I just... Another disappointment. He actually did say it's caused from hyaluronidase, but it's also caused from other factors.
Scott told Lana that she had, quote, significant soft tissue changes and facial laxity, most likely related to multiple hyaluronidase treatments, but that other factors at play could be Lana's ageing, weight fluctuation, and that a lot of time had passed since she'd had the dissolver.
He does agree that there's something not right with my skin, but he's not going to blame hyaluronidase on it. Not 100% anyway.
As we walk up the street toward a taxi rank, Lana's shock and anger that she'd had after this appointment slowly turns to resolve.
I'm not giving up. This has just given me more determination. Yep.
Are you going to head to the airport now?
Yep. I'm going straight to the airport, straight home. That's enough for me.
Next time on the final episode of Before and After, a sunscreen maker finds something wrong with his product. But when he starts digging, he realises he's not the only one with a problem.
I reached out and said, look, I think there's an issue with some sunscreens out there.
That's next week on Background Briefing. Background Briefing's sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Simon Branthwaite. Music composition by Emrys Cronin. Fact-checking by Justine Landis-Hanley and additional reporting by Rachel Clayton. Our rollout producer is Ben Sveen. The supervising producer is Max Chalmers. And our executive producer is Fanu Falali. The reporter on this story is Gina McEwen, and I'm Thomas O'Reedy. You can subscribe to Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.